This is The Spark. I'm Martha Whitford. Listener Robin Dixon of Farmville suggested talking with Irish-trained stonemason Dana Nelson for The Spark. Last week, you had a little taste of what Dana has to say when he told a story gleaned from the decade he spent working stone in Ireland. But today, it's time for the main course. So how did Dana Nelson come to develop his close relationship with rock?
Well, I suppose it started out, I grew up in a little town in North Dakota, outside of a little town, actually it was 20 miles one way, a little place called Lakota, and I spent a great deal of my childhood picking rocks off the fields, and little did I know that I would have some sort of a future in then reassembling them into structures, but...
Take me from there to here.
Well, I started being a stonemason actually quite late in life. I was a traveling musician, and I was playing over in Ireland. I met my future wife there. I would go and tour there once or twice a year. Saw all the stonework there. Thought it was really cool.
What kind of musician?
Rock and roll and blues. I write my own music and produce my own music as well as doing the stonework. And we decided we were going to go back to Ireland after meeting up and maybe try and just live there for 3 months. Well, we ended up staying for 10 and a half years.
Oh, my.
And
why?
I think it was just kind of an enchanting place. It was beautiful. I had lots of friends there already from traveling over there and playing music. So it really wasn't like moving to a strange place. It was like moving to a place where you already knew most of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And Ireland is really an enchanting place. The people are really characters and welcoming. And
where were you based?
Around Cork City, which is the second biggest city in Ireland, and it's right down at the south. We always joke that it was the California of Ireland. So when we landed there and decided it looked like we were going to stay for a while, and the money was starting to run out, I was playing a lot of gigs, but it wasn't really enough to support us, I guess. And some of my friends who were musicians as well were these English guys, and one in particular was a master English stonemason.
Which means what?
Which would mean he would have had all his, served his apprenticeship and had certification from a building foundation called the London City and Guilds, which certifies all trades, like they've been through a college is what they called it there, of building, and learned all the math and had to pass all the exams from a technical aspect as well as from a work aspect.
So this is the 21st century version, or I guess the 20th century version at that time, of the old guild system.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yep, it was the London City of Guilds. And anyway, he took me on, and I started at the bottom, sorting stone, mixing mortar, and everything was done almost by a wheelbarrow, picking a shovel. I've built houses where you had to throw the stone up on scaffolds. I mean, Ireland wasn't a highly mechanized society 10 years ago. It's gotten a little bit better, but and I really found that I had an eye for it and was interested kind of in the structural end of it. And
no, wait a minute, back up. You had an eye for it. What does that mean?
To build with stone, it's a never-ending puzzle. You have to satisfy many different things. You have to satisfy an engineering or a functional level, an architectural level sometimes when you're building around things, you know, windows and doors, but then also the aesthetic, and that's where your eye comes in. You know, just because a stone will fit next to one doesn't mean it's the right one to go there. You have all those different levels to consider, and when you've done it long enough, it just kind of comes to you. But I've worked with a lot of people who didn't have the eye, and it was fairly disastrous results, you know.
It just wasn't right, or it fell down?
Well, it didn't fall down, but the old English saying was, if it draws your eye to it, if it causes attention to a certain spot on the wall, it's a mistake. You should look at it all as a whole, you know, sweep all the way down the wall, and it should just seem like it fits together. The old saying as well is, you know, a good job is one you got paid for.
Yeah.
A bad job is one you didn't. So, you know, you can't drive around the countryside and look down your nose at everything. Everybody comes from a different place, I suppose. But I feel I was very fortunate as I received my training as the oldest apprentice in Ireland.
Were you really?
From some seriously good stonemasons. I'd say I probably was. I'd say I was in my late 30s when I started my apprenticeship.
Never too late.
Nope,
is it to get it right?
I often wondered why I was shoveling mortar, you know, out in a 40-mile-an-hour gale. But at the end, when you stand back and look at the wall, then you realize why.
Take me through your learning curve.
The learning curve begins at the bottom, and a truck delivers 20 tons of stone, and a guy walks up to you, hands you a wheelbarrow, and he says, "Bring me stone and put it over there by that foundation where I'm going to start building." And you say, "Well, what do you want?" And he holds up a stone with some sort of a perpendicular face on it, and he says, "I want stones like that." And then he walks away. And there you stand in the rain and the wind and looking at 20 tons of stone. You don't have any idea what he wants or what he doesn't. So you start wheeling stone over to the wall and dumping it. And he'd pick up at least half of it and throw it away and say, "What are you bringing me this for? I showed you what I want." But slowly you start to develop kind of an eye before you ever build anything of where things go or what is required. But then also the fun part is you're mixing all the mortar.
Now I got to ask about this. You're given a formula. I'm a baker. And measuring is all very nice, but touch and look and feel and smell is what, after you've been doing it a while, sort of it decides things. Is it the same with mortar?
There's a certain appearance or what a mason would call a workability. You know, some stone will take a lot of water out of the mortar, like bricks will. Hmm. So you make it very wet. Some stone won't. So you mix it almost like a powder. The formula part is parts of sand to parts of cement and or lime. But lime is actually the old way. You know, the Romans were doing it thousands of years ago or a couple of thousand years ago. It doesn't crack. It takes water in, lets water out. It's still the way to go, but very few people use it.
So you're toting stone and you're mixing cement?
Yep.
How long does this go on before somebody said, "Build a wall over there"?
Well, I suppose it was at least a year or a year and a half, I suppose, before I picked up a trowel. But you kind of get to a point where as a laborer, if you're caught up and you have your stone there and enough mortar mixed, you're kind of standing around. So then the fella in his gruff Yorkshire accent would say, "Come on, lad, pick up a trowel." And he would give you a little section to work on. And then, you know, the first couple of times, probably come over and just take it down and say, "Do that again," which would break your heart. But we'll kind of show you the lay of the land. And sooner or later, the more you were caught up, the more you were building. But you were still first responsible for materials and mortar.
All right. Yeah. You just came back when?
Last January.
All right. Yeah. So about a year ago.
Yeah.
While you were still there, did you become a stonemason? I mean, were you the lead guy?
Yeah, when I finished kind of serving my time, I suppose it wasn't really an official paperwork thing, although, as they would say in Ireland, sure, we can create some. For, I suppose, the last 4 years I was there, I had my own business, and I was never out of work. The Irish people took me in as one of their own. Anybody who's not even from the same village is a blow-in, so you'd be a blow-in the rest of your life. But I worked almost exclusively in one little parish where I lived out in the countryside and never drove more than 10 minutes to work for years.
Tell me the range of your projects. What did you build?
Well, anything from entire houses, chimneys, fireplaces. A lot of homes there build a fancy entranceway with pillars and like a garden wall. Towards the end of my time there, I actually got into a lot of renovation of Irish ditches, is what they call them. And that's when you look at a picture of Ireland from an airplane and you see all the hedgerows and all the, mm-hmm. the patchwork fields. All of that greenery is actually stone walls that were cleared from the land. And with so many people building, there's a huge boom, like I said, in the 90s and in the last decade. People were knocking all those walls down to get machinery in and build a home. And they have kind of like a zoning or a planning commission that was telling people, well, you've got to restore these things the way they were. And very few people knew how to do it anymore. So I just jumped in with both hands and a shovel and a pick, and after a while, you kind of get the engineering hang of it all, and that's what I did for a lot of the last couple of years I was there, was repairing ancient dry stone walls. I guess they call it dry stacking here, but this is dry stone there.
This was, what a great way to be in touch with your location's history.
Yeah, yeah.
Restoring its stone walls.
Well, and it's, you know, I suppose from an environmental standpoint, You know, there's no mortar. It's all earth and stone and putting in a form. Plants grow in it. Wildlife lives in it. Birds, bees, bats. It's kind of an interesting circle. A lot of building technology is tear things down, throw it away, slap something up. You're actually building something that's going to be there for hundreds of years, and it just becomes part of the landscape, you know?
I went on your website and looked at your 118 pictures or how many ideas, which were wonderful. I thought, stone wall. And there was a little house that looked as though it was completely whitewashed on the outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were dry stone walls, mm-hmm. and there was mortar stone walls. How do you make a decision about what kind of stone construction you're going to
use? Well, like the whitewashed type of building that you saw was actually a renovation. Those were old, early 1800s buildings on an old farm, and they were kind of falling apart. And the people who owned it rebuilt the cottage on the inside. And what they found was is they took all the plaster off, and it was so old that there wasn't even mortar. It was mud. And once they opened the walls up, it all started to dry and to crumble.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to quickly repair everything on the inside with lime mortar. And the stonework was so bad because it was never intended to be seen. It was their building material. It was their cement blocks, yeah. You know, in the late 17, 1800s, you know. So if you were really, really poor, you saw stone. If you had any money at all, you plastered over it. So when this plaster was removed, the stonework, they thought they were going to have this beautiful stone interior of their house, and it was awful. So that's what you call a cottage finish, where you actually nearly replaster it, but scrape it back so that you see the face of the stone, and then you paint it with whitewash, with lime, not with mm-hmm. paint, mm-hmm. so that it can still breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked it so much that I did all the buildings on the place afterwards. That's what that one is.
It looked like there was one that looked like a little tiny house.
It's his little well house. There's the well and the pump were in there.
It was wonderful. I had a wood stove. I thought, I've got my suitcase packed.
Yeah,
I'm moving
in. Yeah. That's the cottage on the inside. And it turned out really well. And then, he had me did the whole rest of the place, built new entranceways and repaired all the old buildings.
Then we had walls that are dry stack and walls where it looked as though mortar was used. What determines that?
Well, sometimes you're trying to match an existing wall or mm-hmm. Matching what's there. Some people want you to match something traditional. Some people, if they build a new house, they want a certain design, and then they want the garden walls, as they would say there, the lawn,
mm-hmm.
Done in the same way so that everything matches. So that determines a lot of it. Sometimes people come to you and say, I want something in this space, do whatever you want. But a lot of times, either the zoning or planning people have told them what they have to match or what range of ideas they can use. The really interesting stuff for me, I think, is going back to the ancient and building the dry, because a lot of it is field stone. It doesn't come from a quarry. It's not cut with a saw. And that is the real puzzle to put together. And it's really fun when you come back a couple months later and things have already grown out over the top and out through all the little cracks. And it already looks, 100 years old. And
I was looking at some pictures of some of your stone walls, and there was thousands of stones stacked up, and yet it canted back
right.
carefully.
Yeah.
And very meticulously. Now, how you go about doing that?
Well, that's called batter. You batter the wall, which means lean it back in. And a lot of those walls are bad. If they're both double-sided walls, they're battered on both sides. So they might be 3 feet wide on the bottom and a foot and a half wide by the time you get to the top. And that's two reasons. Gravity works to push the stones down, but also into the wall. So over time, as things shift and move with frost or with weather, it settles into itself instead of tips over and falls out. So doing a dry stone wall when you're making it plumb is actually a huge mistake structurally. It looks good for a couple years, and then it'll all start to lean forward. It should always lean back.
So you're getting gravity to work with you
right,
rather than
right.
against you.
And
okay.
thinking long term. It's not going to stay the way it is.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah. 100, 150 years from now, it will still be there. You know, it doesn't tumble out forward. The London City and Guilds, they would tell you to build a little wooden profile so that you get the angle exactly right and have a string line across. Or some people would cut a strange kind of a triangular piece of wood and tape it to their spirit level. But the old way, lad, you do it by eye. You stand back and look at it when you're having a cup of tea.
Can you do that?
Yeah, all that stuff you see was done without a profile,
without
any string.
Profile.
Yeah.
All right. Why on earth did you come back here?
Well, the economy was really, really poor there. Everything crashed for similar reasons, I suppose, that it crashed here. But the Irish banks really did it to themselves. It really wasn't related to Wall Street. So the speculation bubble went, and people were just overnight building just stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife works in education, and with the crash, they stopped funding. They never historically really funded education there anyway. Mm-hmm. And so all of that was cut off. So we just basically had to form a new plan. It was like, I don't know if I've ever lived anywhere I've enjoyed it as much. And to go away from that little community and all of our friends was really hard. But that's why we had to leave. And so we were sitting around having a jar, as they say. And where should we try and live? So we picked
it's
up
a big world.
We picked up a map and we said, somewhere warm.